Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
Hey, Fish Tank listeners, Alvaro Freitas here, CEO of Casabella Design Group and host of the Renovation Revolution podcast. Look, every great football team needs a quarterback, someone who reads the field, calls the play, and leads the drive. That's what I do on your renovation, from kickoff to the final whistle. Whether you're dreaming about a bathroom upgrade, building that bonus room for your just one more week brother-in-law, or teaching you how not to be that pain in the ass client, we cover it all. This is an HGTV flop. It's real talk from a contractor who's been in the dust, the drama, and the demo. So grab a cold brew or un cafecito if that's more of your vibe and join me for the renovation revolution wherever you get this podcast. Follow the show and I'll see you in the huddle.
Man, definitely watching our team put 70 on Broncos and understanding what we had. I would say the work overall, like kind of started to be, you know, stagnant when it came to being complacent. Of the praise kind of maybe I've got to us as a team, once that happens, you know, and the work is not the same load that you once put in order to get to where you were, you know, the play falls off.
Presented by Van Horn Law Group and Casabella Design Group, Seth Levitt and the toughest podcaster Dan Marino ever played with, he is OJ McDuffie. Juice, everything, the stars have aligned for you. We are in the right position group for you. This is kind of the only thing that you allow, and you don't get frustrated with me. Are you ready for this today?
Oh, you know I am, Big Seth. You know, not only is it the right position group, it's one of my favorites, man. One of my favorite casts right here that we've got on today. And I'm excited for the opportunity to chat with him, man, because I never got a chance to chat with him before.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. Very excited. So Eric Ezukama dives into the Fish Tank. Miami Dolphins fan, it's a name that you know well, and it's a name that very familiar and very recent to us, but he's got other things going on in his life, man. So we're excited to talk about all those things. But you just got off the road. You just checked into the hotel and you jumped in with us. So we want to thank you for that. Appreciate you being here.
Definitely. I appreciate y'all having me on.
You know, so Eric, let's get it started right away, man. I mean, this is, let's get this thing started right away. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I opened up my Twitter or X, whatever they're calling it these days, and my feed is just flooded with this highlight, you knocking the shit out of somebody. Some dude from the Columbus Aviators, you know, and that's my home state right there. I don't care. I mean, I'm an Eric Ezukama fan, so it don't really matter to me about any of that, man. And I can't tell you how fired up I was for you, man. I mean, talk about that play real quick and what the reaction has been. And did you ever think you'd be known as a big-ass hitter?
You know, growing up playing peewee football, you're always going back and forth, defense, offense. So I feel like it's always been in me, you know, to be able to make plays like that. But overall, just being on the DC Defenders, you know, it's a 50-man roster. So, you know, guys got to go in all facets of the field. So, you know, Coach Cruzy, you know, he trusts me to be at that two spot on kickoff. And you know, I wanted to, you know, make some noise, you know, outside of the receiver position, because obviously I got drafted as a receiver, but just wanted to be able to display other talents that I have outside of the offensive side of the ball.
You know, Eric, I love the physical part of being a wide receiver too, man, because, you know, dudes are always trying to knock the hell out of us, man. Why can't we ever get some get back? I love getting some get back every once in a while, you know. Yeah. And then how important is that for your teammates when they see you do so. I saw your teammates all over you, bro. You know, that's setting a tone right there. That's setting a tone right there.
Definitely. You know, being new to this team, just joining this team not too long ago, you got to make a good first impression. You know, you got to show your guys, your teammates that I will be in this foxhole with y'all and do whatever is possible in order to, you know, win the game.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. But so let's talk about that. You just said you just joined this team. Yeah. I'd love to hear about your UFL journey so far, right? So DC Defenders, 3-1, I think. So off to a heck of a start, 3-1. You're playing a ton of football right now. Definitely. How much different has the experience been compared to what the previous 3 or 4 years of football have been like for you? And then is there anything that has stood out the most for you thus far in this UFL journey?
The UFL journey has been very interesting and a blessing, honestly. It wasn't in my plans after leaving the Dolphins and, you know, going to Jacksonville for a little bit. I kind of was doing workouts and stuff and trying to find my footing in hopes of, you know, getting back on the NFL roster. But when I saw that opportunity, probably won't present itself until, you know, I show that I can still play, you know, at a high level. And so, you know, I got a call from Fred Keitz, our OC, and we talked here and there, and he was trying to convince me, you know, to you know, join over, come over and play for us, and talks with my agent and thought about it and join the team, you know. And I just want to play football, you know, at the end of the day, you know, being on the Dolphins, I didn't really play that much, but obviously being on that roster with Tyreek, Jalen, and watching the talent we had, you know, obviously I took a lot from that and applied it to myself to, you know, keep pushing and keep going, knowing that I can play. And yeah, I've played a lot of football so far this season, and it's been great. You know, I feel like my body's been obviously holding up, and I'm still young. I'm 26, still have a lot of ball left in me. So just being able to have the opportunity to, you know, showcase what I could do.
Yeah, you know, I want to circle back, like you talk about, Eric, to some of your Dolphin days, man, because, you know, that was always a very, you know, interesting for me that, you know, the Dolphins take you in the fourth round in 2022 draft, and in a blink of an eye, you know, you go from Lubbock, Texas to a wide receiver room like you talked about with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and your position coach, of course, is Wes Welker. You know, how wild was that transition? And, you know, how was that room? It had to be a very interesting room, because I see some different characters in there. I mean, you had Trent Sherfield and, you know, Riv, Craycraft, and Cedric Wilson Jr., all those guys in there. How wild was that room? And not necessarily wild, but how was that room in general?
It was a good time. It was all about the work, though, at the end of the day. Wes Welker, him being a Red Raider with me, it was very comforting and helped me settle in as a pro, and he helped me understand the urgency that I had to have in order to, you know, play in this league. But, you know, having Tyreek and Jalen and Trent Sherfield, Cedric Wilson, River Craycraft, Bryson Berrios, Odell Beckham, just to name a few that I've seen come in and out, it was great. You know, I learned a lot from Wes Welker and how to, you know, get open as a receiver, because I feel like at Tech I was kind of just playing off athletic ability. And once you get to the NFL, you're not really able to do that. You know, you actually have to have a plan in order to be successful in that league. So it was a great time. And to be able to be in a room with guys like that again is definitely something that I strive to get back to.
That's a great point you just made there about Wes Welker being your wide receiver coach, because I tell Seth all the time and people that we have on that, you know, playing wide receiver, I didn't really learn how to play it until I got in the league. And I played it all through Penn State, my first few years for the Dolphins. But then I got this coach in Robert Ford who knew how to play and coach the position. So it's really strange sometimes when you got, like, I had a GA coach me at Penn State. That's my wide receiver. He's actually my roommate. You know, like, damn, bro. Like, I'm learning wide receiver from, like, one of my best friends, which, you know, which didn't help much. But you're talking about how the difference is. Those are difference makers. When you got somebody like Wes Welker who knew how to, you know, get open, obviously, knew how to play the position, and how that helped you become a better receiver, even though you kicked a lot of ass in Lubbock.
It's crazy. Yeah. Wes Welker, you know, It's teaching me how to read defenses and learn leverages and how to attack leverages, spray, and being able to manipulate, you know, your body to manipulate the defense and get open and being he used to say an advantageous position to succeed.
So, and we're not gonna make the whole interview about Wes, but I did have kind of a follow up question there.
Right.
Is that right? As you mentioned, right, it was comforting at first, and he comes out. That was a big story leading up to and then through the draft. Once you were selected, is that Wes went out to Lubbock and he worked you out, and you know he's a Red Raider legend and get your guns up and all that cool stuff, and that's all fun. But then the work has to start. And while the Dolphins, and maybe we will or won't get into this, I think the Dolphins, one of the criticisms of the Dolphins over the last handful of years under Mike McDaniel was that maybe they weren't coached particularly hard, right? You know, that very smart coach, but not maybe disciplined or weren't coached particularly hard. But none of us ever believed that was happening in your room because we know Wes. Like, Juice and I have known Wes for a long time since he played for the Dolphins.
Yes.
And he's not the kind of guy that just lets stuff slide. And I felt like even when he was asked about you when you were on the roster, that he was pretty direct. And it was clear you were being held to a high standard and that Wes needed to feel you were ready to play. Was there ever kind of a shift where it was difficult because he was a tough and demanding coach, or did you appreciate the fact that he was a tough and demanding coach?
A little bit of both. Just in general, as a young player, you know, I came in at 22. You know, there's guys in the room that I've already played, and honestly, it was mostly like a player-led room. Wes would give his points and tell us where to be in the right spots, but you know, we have a Hall of Famer right here. You know, there's not much you can tell him, you know, when it comes to playing the position. So Wes is a Hall of Famer as well. So it was more so like 10 led by example. And at the end of the day, for me personally, to be successful in that room at that time, I just needed to, you know, grow up a bit faster. And with the systematic of the offense and just knowing what's going on the other side of the ball before it happens, you know, there was only so much Wes could do for me to flourish when it came down to it, because, you know, I just had to mature and grow just a bit faster, I believe, at that time.
What if going bankrupt was the best thing that happened to you? Whether it's your wages being garnished, car repossessed, house foreclosed, or you're suffocating with debt, a good bankruptcy attorney can give you peace of mind that you need and deserve. My name is Chad Van Horn from Van Horn Law Group, and I've personally seen people thrive after filing for bankruptcy. The shame of bankruptcy is just a ploy to keep you in debt forever. There is no shame to work with Van Horn Law Group to get rid of your debt for good. If you're ready to get your life back, call us today. Se habla Espanol.
Yeah, you know, Eric, I mean, Miami's not easy either, man, for a young guy coming in too, man. And I know for a fact, and Seth knows this about me, man, I love being drafted down here in Miami, man. And so to be able to balance the two, you know professional life, of course, and you know, then of course, you know, you got to be able to enjoy South Florida. It's not like we're in some of these, one of these other cities where there's nothing going on, so it's always tough, man. And I get that, you know, as a young guy, it's tough, man. It was tough on me too, bro. So I completely understand, man.
Yeah, it took me a while, but then towards the end, like 2-3 years in, I started to understand it. But, you know, there was a lot going on in the organization and, you know, you know how that goes.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. You know, Big Seth and Eric, man, it felt like every year, man, it was kind of like, we were kind of on a similar journey. You know, we get really excited about you, and this is going to be your year. And we saw a flash of what you could do, especially in the preseason. And then you get caught up with the injury bug, man. It was so frustrating for me as a fan, because Seth and I were still huge fans of yours, man. But when you were in that aqua and orange, man, just huge fans, man. So, but how frustrating was it for you, man? I mean, you're the guy that's going through it, man. How frustrating was it for you?
It was pretty frustrating. You know, you have a tweak here and there. And, you know, at the end of the day, my role on the Miami Dolphins was a greedy player that was going to get his nose dirty and do whatever it took in order to, you know, see action. So, you know, an injury of any sort would keep me from being that aggressive and gritty player that they needed me to be. If I was just lining up outside and running routes, then it wouldn't have been, I feel like, as problematic as if, you know, the position I was in was, you know, down blocking on a DN or going to crack block a linebacker. And I have this hit pointer, you know? So at the end of the day, you know, timing's everything and everything happens for a reason. But I'm always looking forward to what's next and taking everything day by day.
Yeah. And it is interesting as you say that, and we talked about that room earlier, and, you know, clearly just electric players in 10 and 17. Oh, we call them 10 and 17. I imagine they're still wearing the same numbers somewhere else, right, Juice? Well, I know Tyreek is still recovering. But they were smallish guys. They were small, quick, fast blazers. And you came in with this big, you know, I think that was what a lot of us were excited about, is that's what was missing and kind of still has been missing for the Dolphins for some time at that position, at least getting productivity out of a guy, you know, a big frame, a big target. Was that expressed to you that was the hope, that you were going to come in there and they wanted to take advantage of the fact that you're a 6'2 guy and, you know, 210 pounds and had an opportunity to give them something as electric as those guys are, to give them something that they didn't offer?
Yeah, obviously, you know, you look at me and then you look at, you know, the average size of the room, and you would expect, you know, a guy like me to be running 20 yards downfield and you just throw it up and give him opportunity to make a play. But I don't think that was in the plans. It was more so of a support role, block, and then get over, kind of like how Malik Washington kind of came in and was playing that F adjuster role. I think that was what I was, you know, supposed to, you know, be starting out. But I feel like I had a different impression of what I would have been. And at the end of the day, I don't think it was communicated clearly through me or whoever was, if it was Mike or anything like that. But, you know, I was just blessed to be in the position and am excited for what's next.
No doubt. Sure. And we won't spend too much more time looking back, but I appreciate you giving us time to talk about the team. And this is more of a question about the offense as a whole. But you do have this very unique perspective, as even though you weren't getting on the field to contribute as much as you would have wanted to, whether it was for injury, whether it was for, you know, the growth that needed to happen. But you had an up close and personal view, practice, meeting rooms, and certainly on game days of an offense that had gotten to a point where it was like the most explosive offense in football, almost broke an all-time scoring record in that Denver game, you know, and then all of a sudden in the final month of 2023, and then certainly throughout 2024, it was like all that magic was gone and the offense became pedestrian. It was like the team had been figured out. I'm just curious from your perspective, and this isn't necessarily an Eric Azukama question, but just as somebody who was in these meetings for the Miami Dolphins offense, like, what do you think happened to this offense that was so dynamic and then couldn't get out of its own way, it almost seemed like?
Man, definitely watching our team put 70 on Broncos and understanding what we had and kind of fast-forwarding it to the next year. I feel like just overall, I would say the work overall kind of started to be, you know, stagnant when it came to being complacent. You know, the praise kind of maybe I've got to us as a team. Once that happens and the work is not the same load that you once put in order to get to where you were, you know, the play falls off. So that's what, like, I feel like with everybody, you know, just from 1 to 10, and, you know, I feel like 17-1 will forever have that connection to where, you know, from Bama, you know, but I know 10 and 1 was were the engine of the team. So, you know, Devon Achane, you know, came in and took that role. But when he took the role, it felt like he wouldn't be able to, you know, kind of replicate what Tan can do on the outside, where you can put him in motion and have him run 50-yard or 50-yard touchdown passes, and when those touchdowns kind of dwindled a little bit from that department, it kind of shocked the offense of what we could do, because you could hand the ball off to 2-8 every play, and it wouldn't be the same as if you're still launching it downfield and as well as giving your best running back the ball. So I feel like that's what kind of what happened.
It seemed like a little philosophy change, and you know, yeah, and that you know, for wide receivers, look, we love running routes, E. You know what I mean? Now all of a sudden we gotta block, like you talked about, you know, more often than we're used to, and we're used to chucking this rock to the point of, you know, 70 plus points in a game and so on and so forth, man. So I get it, man. And that's what happened to us, except as you know, late in my career, you know, we didn't chuck it around as much with Danny. We tried to run the ball. We played great defense, but we'd lost our mojo through the air. And that really, really killed us, man. I mean, if we could have been a complimentary team when it comes to being able to pass the ball and play that great defense, we might have won some other games than we won. So anyhow, but I digress right there, Eric. I want to talk about this, though, real quick. This part of your game that has been undeniable at every step, I mean, of your journey, your ability to make things happen once the rock is in your hands, man. We even started to see this big Seth in the preseason, like glimpses of them giving him the ball on jet sweeps and, you know, just trying to find other ways to showcase that, showcase my man. Where did that run after catch ability come from? Like, I played running back most of my life, and then I got to college and I went to wide receiver, but I still had those running back instincts, man. Where did you get that? Were you ever a running back before you got to, you know, Tech and everything?
Yeah, you know, I played running back up until my sophomore year of high school. So, you know, through Little League, just developed the ball carrier vision and, you know, the elusiveness of, you know, wanting to break tackles and run towards the end zone, no matter, you know, who's in my way. It just gives me this confidence to know that one person won't be able to tackle me. So when I do see one person, I try to, you know, give him hell, you know, while I have the ability to with the ball in my hands.
He says that so nonchalant, Juice. Yeah, I just try to give him hell.
Give him hell, man. Make him pay for this. You got to pay for this.
I just love the feeling of, you know, having a defender try to tackle me and they just can't. It fuels the fire in me, and I feel like it's one of the best things I do on the field.
Hey, nothing like having the rock in your hand, man, no matter how they give it to you. Kickoff return, punt return, jet sweep, catching the rock. But, you know, that first guy, no matter what, is not allowed to get us to the ground. No matter what.
Never.
He's got to bring the cavalry with him, man. Got to.
Never. I love that. Yes, sir.
So, you know, a couple questions ago, you said that, you know, you're blessed for what has happened in the past and you're looking forward to the opportunity and what's next. What is next? Tell us what's next for Eric Ezukama. Like, you obviously, there's six more games in this season that you're in as a DC defender, and I know you want to keep that momentum rolling. But I'm curious, like, what does the master plan look like in your mind?
So, yeah, this is my first time in the UFL. I've been a 3-year vet in the NFL. So this is all kind of new to me, like the whole structure of everything. And I know that there's a window here that I have in spring football before the NFL training camp. So, you know, right now, stay healthy, you know, play very well, try to play the best I can and help this team win. Hopefully we don't just have six games. We have another 3 or 4 to, you know, win the championship. But to me right now, it's not even about stats or how many touchdowns I get. It's more so, you know, what I can do on the field in all facets, special teams and offense, you know, to help this team win and hopefully getting, you know, invite from an NFL team or, you know, get brought back to the Miami Dolphins as an option, knowing that, you know, I've only played really for them, you know, in a game. So, you know, that there's new front office and there's a lot of players on the team that I still know and would instantly gel with. But a master plan is, you know, to get back on an NFL roster and compete in a training camp to, you know, further my career.
You know, I want Eric back so bad, man. You know, I
and,
do.
And they
bro.
Say Sully likes big bodied receivers. So, you know, let's, right. That, I mean, that's right. What they say. We're learning. We're learning as you are here. It's a new regime here.
We'll learn as we go.
And I guess we'll see starting tonight what kind of things they do in the draft. All right. So we're going to let you get to rest. I know how important it is to get that rest before games. So our final segment here in the Fish Tank is our Fish Tank 2-minute drill. What wideout doesn't like to get on the field during a 2-minute drill, right?
Love
so
it.
We're putting 2 minutes
Love
on the it. Clock. We're going to throw some fast-paced questions at you, hopefully some fun questions at you, and then we'll get you out of here. Sound good?
Gotcha. Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. All right. Standing at 6'2", you are the second tallest Red Raider to ever play for the Miami Dolphins. Can you name the tallest Red Raider that played for the team as well as the shortest?
The tallest, I would say Zach Thomas.
He's going to love it. Did he pay you to say this?
Yeah, he's going to love it.
Little ass,
well, you're taller than Zach, though.
This?
You're taller than you. Yeah, well, you're like, taller you said, than Zach. Oh,
besides, there's one taller than you.
There's one taller than me.
It's gonna be hard.
I know the shortest is West for sure.
Has no, there's actually
close.
There oh, no, it is. The yeah, Jakeem is the shortest.
There you go. There you go.
Jakeem Grant is the shortest. The tallest. I don't know the tallest.
Yeah, Andre Tillman.
Yeah, he was a tight
Andre
end. Tillman's 6'4" tight end. Played in the
70s. It might escape you, for sure. Okay. For sure. It's in the 70s.
I mean, he's a Red Raider. These Red Raiders, they know their history. So that's what I thought it would be.
Right.
We'll keep it moving. He got Jakeem, so I think that's a positive play in this 2-minute drill. You wore number 13 at Texas Tech.
Right.
You're wearing number 13 with the DC Defenders. But when you came to Miami, how quickly was it understood that 13 was not going to be available?
It's not, you know, Dan Marino, he's the guy, you know, he's my guy. So I knew I couldn't even ask that question. So
like, all right, what else you got?
I moved on. I was trying to get number 3, didn't get number 3, got 18. So I was good with it.
Yeah, just getting a number, right? Getting a number in the league is all important, man. Like, hey, Eric, back in the day, I mean, Seth, we got a little time on the clock here, but back in the day, wide receivers had to wear 80 numbers, man. So I was just happy to get an 80 number coming into camp, bro. You know, everybody else, you know, the guys were in teens back there.
Yeah,
they were worried about their position on the squad, man.
Yeah.
That's what
really?
All right. Wow. So, yeah, but now, you know, with all the retirement numbers and all these other things, so I kind of like it, man. But I wore 24 in college. That wouldn't look good either as a wide receiver in the league either. So no matter what. All right, clock back on, Big Seth. All right, you're a graduate of Timber Creek High School in Fort Worth, Texas, where the school has its own coffee shop named the Daily Grind. What does Eric Ezukama's Daily Grind look like?
My Daily Grind? Like my routine?
Yeah. What's it like?
Okay, so I get up, shower, all that stuff, drive to practice. We go to meetings, we do our meetings with coach. And afterward, that's when the grind starts. It's the recovery grind, you know. So I go to Lifetime Fitness, hot tub, cold tub, contrast, back and forth, 5 minutes each, sauna, get home, stretch, then do recovery boots and, you know, Epsom salt bath. And I'm able to practice, you know, the next day at a full speed pace that doesn't look like, you know, I'm hurting.
Did you learn that routine in the NFL, or is that a new adapted routine?
I did learn that routine in NFL, and, you know, like, as, you know, being in NFL, being on the Dolphins, the facility, amazing. Everything is in one place. So, you know, being blessed to have that and learn that. Wow.
Very
you
cool.
Know, being
so, Juice, I'm going to use a second time out here. I want to stop the clock real quick because we used it to have fun with the name, but your high school had its own coffee shop at the high school?
It wasn't there when I was there. A lot has changed.
What?
You know, Texas high school football is crazy. You know, it's paying a lot of stuff. I think we have an indoor facility now. So it's... Yeah, they're doing well.
Creek.
Big money, Juice, big money in Texas.
Piper
big
High School did not have a coffee shop when I was there. Now, granted, I ain't been there in a long, long time. I'm an old man, but wow. Okay, all right. Time back in. Last question here. Let's get this thing over the end zone. The first thing that Juice said when you came on camera, he said, Eazy-E, we love calling you Eazy-E, especially some older cats like us who certainly have a great appreciation for 1980s gangster rap. What is your favorite Eazy-E song?
Favorite Eazy-E song. Honestly, wasn't into like Eazy-E music, but I know I watched the movie N.W.A. and first
Straight Outta Compton
stuff like that. So, it was dope to watch that, but I don't have an Eazy-E song.
We'll take all of them.
Juice, what's your favorite Eazy-E song?
Straight Outta Compton.
There it is. That's the 2-minute drill. Great stuff. He is Eazy-E. Let me ask you this question. It's outside of the 2 minutes, but we sometimes come up with these nicknames as guys on the outside looking in, watching these games and have nicknames for guys. And when you were with the team, OJ and I collectively with Travis Wingfield, we're doing the post game show. And so we called different people, different things, and Eazy-E, like, were you cool with that name? Cause we find, you know, Darth Cater was one with Cater Kohu that I thought as a Star Wars geek is a great name. And everybody's like, Cater hates that name. What are your thoughts when fans give you these nicknames?
I've had his nicknames. My offensive coordinator in high school called me Eazy-E, and it just has stuck. Yeah. And it just stuck with me.
Probably a guy our age, Juice.
Yeah. So, you know, my last name, you know, sometimes people butcher it. So it's like Eazy-E, that's our Eazy. And
Eazy, yes.
I like it though. I like my nickname. There it is. That's great.
Love
That's slick. That's slick. That's slick. For sure, man. Well, Eric, man, we appreciate you diving in, man. Thanks for diving in, bro.
I appreciate y'all. Thank you, Seth and Juice. Appreciate you having me on. And Kings Nation, love y'all forever. This is strictly for them true fans. Dolphins, number one. Of course, y'all. This ain't no ordinary sports talk. Never been that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank.